You're listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life.
Here I am in one of the best hospital systems in the world. Here I am still having a wife by my bedside. Here I am still having healthy kids. Here I am still alive. And so there's a deep sense of gratitude that has been instilled in my life for most of my journey.
Now, here's your hosts, Tim and Des.
All right, well, welcome to this week's Momentum. So great to have you tuning in all around the nation. Hey, just a quick point to the website before we launch into the show, momentumaustralia.org. Lots of stuff there for you to help you succeed in life, which is our tagline. My co-host, friend, is back with us. Great guy as well. Des?
You don't know me that well. No, it's just great. I love what we do, and we're so blessed today. It's really cool to have this fine young man with us. Just on the way, let me just tell you about our support line. We mention this every week. We have a support line for men, which is the Momentum Care line. The number's amazing. It's 1-800-000-MEN. And so, you know, even I can remember that as an old bloke. 1-800-000-636. The service is provided by our friends at Careline Connections, and you can reach out and get help 7 days a week, 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. 1-800-000-MEN.
Yeah, and you know, we all need to have a conversation at some stage, so if you feel like you need a confidential one with someone that's not necessarily in a close circle, that's a good place to go. 1-800-000-636. You know, we have some incredible people on the show, and this week is no exception. We all have moments and experiences in life that changes. And today we're going to hear from someone who's got a profound story. In October 2006, Sam Cawthorn's life changed forever when he was involved in a major car accident, left him with an amputated right arm and a permanent disability in his right leg.
Yeah, Sam went on to become one of the world's most in-demand global professional speakers. And having spoken to him for just a few minutes, I can see why. It's amazing. So you're going to enjoy this conversation. Sam has inspired audiences in 36 countries, sharing his message of resilience with millions of people. And the stage with world leaders, including President Bill Clinton, Michael Jordan, Richard Branson, and Dalai Lama. Let me just say, just and by way of reference, I'm one of the few people who have bought Michael Jordan a beer and had no idea who he was.
We'll come back to that. Sam is also the CEO, founder of Speakers Institute and Speakers Tribe. He's the author of 11 books, including 5 international bestsellers. He's been both the Young Australian of the Year and more recently the Edupreneur of the Year. We'll find out what that means in just a moment. But Sam Cawthorn, welcome to Momentum officially.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, firstly, how does it feel? I mean, when you hear yourself introduce that, I mean, there's a lot in that. And when most people just hear that for the first time, they go, wow, that's pretty impressive. How does that feel, knowing your journey and where you've come from and where you are right now? When you're introduced like that, what does that do for you?
Look, it is a little surreal, but also at the same time, very humbled, very, very blessed. Look, I just see myself as, you know, continuing to walk my walk. And all the accolades and all the success. Yes, it makes me feel good, but I do know that there is more.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good response, man.
Just before we move on, edupreneur. Yeah. Explain that for me. I've never heard of that term.
Yeah. So it's an award for entrepreneurs that are in education.
Okay.
Nowadays, there's an award for everything. You know, I was actually at a dentist association recently and actually had an award for the best toothpaste lid. I mean, look, you've got every single award, but basically it's an international award where you've got a lot of people that are in education, but also entrepreneurs. Mm. And so we run an education company and we won a global award for that. So it was a good feeling.
Oh, fantastic. So good. So tell us, Sam, about your upbringing. You know, and we know you're one of 11 kids. How do you remember the names of all 11? That's the first question.
Look, I'm number 9 in the order. And so you know how they say that with kids it works in groups of 3. You know, you've got the oldest who's the cheeky one, then you've got the middle, then the youngest is the most loved. I'm number 9, so I'm still trying to work out which one. But look, it was quite a fascinating journey. Look, we're from Tasmania. I'm an uncle, I think, 39 times.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's what happens down here in Tasmania.
It has that reputation.
but look, the good thing is when you've got a lot of brothers, a lot of sisters, you know, we are mates. And yes, yeah, there was a lot of banter and a lot of fights when we were young kids. There was even a couple of fist fights. But at the same time, now a lot of us are all older. We've got our own kids and now even great uncles as well. But it's a really, really good thing when you've got brothers, you know, literally blood brothers that you can rely on and continue to be mates with.
Tell us a bit about yourself growing up. Obviously, number nine. What sort of person were you? What sort of kid were you growing up?
Look, I always did like to stand out. And so, you know, it's really interesting. In a family of 11, if you don't eat fast, you don't get fed. if you're not loud, you're not heard. If you're not fast, then you're not, so for me, I was one of those loud people. I like to be heard. I like to be a bit of, you know, the center of attention. So, you know, there was everything from I was a fast runner. I always had that competition type mindset. I've always been a strong, loud voice, so I can be heard. Even today, I'm still a very fast eater. And so, for me, I suppose if you weren't a big personality, you're not really heard, and you're a bit of a nobody in a large family. So I've always sort of, you know, enjoyed the stage, if you want to call it that. And I've always liked being heard.
So growing up with a Indian father and a Scottish mother, is that the right way?
Actually, it's the other way around.
Oh, the other way around. Oh, sorry. An Indian mother and a Scottish father.
Yeah. So my father, he's got the whole red beard. And
oh, really?
My mum, you know, they're actually just out of Kolkata. And look, you could literally create a movie on how they met as Dad was doing some prac there in country India, about 3 hours out of Kolkata back in the 1950s. And then they met, and I suppose it was then love at first sight. And
wow. And
I think my oldest sister was born in India, and then they migrated here to Australia. In Perth in WA. Yeah. So most of us were all born. Actually, I think all of us were born in Perth. Actually, it's quite interesting. My older sister got married a week before my youngest brother was born.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Wow, that's amazing.
Sam, as far as, I mean, you described a bit about who you were, and we're going to launch into then the day your world changed in 2006. But up until that point, I mean, I think you'd had a bit of a bent towards some performing arts. Was dancing part of your thing?
Look, it was quite interesting. At school, I didn't quite, you know, I didn't quite fit in.
That doesn't surprise me.
But also at the same time, I wasn't very academic either. Right. And so I found my acceptance in the naughty kids. These naughty kids, they sort of influenced me in a bit of a toxic way. Mm. And so I found myself getting kicked out of school. I got expelled. But I always knew deep down that there was still something more in my life. So I managed to get a good job with the Australian government as a youth futurist. But, I also did a lot of extracurricular activities. So I set up a little music studio at home. I was teaching singing. I was also, you know, playing the guitar, playing the piano. But also, I was doing a lot of some dancing. I was youth pastor and musical director of the church.
Wow.
But also at the same time, you know, married and had two kids. We got married when we were 16 when we met. When we're 19, we got engaged, and then 3 days after I turned 20, we got married. And we're actually still together today, 25 years.
Congratulations.
That's awesome.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting, because getting married so young tends to lead to breakdown of marriages later on, because you don't really know who you are when you get married at 20. So for you to survive that is incredible. Well done.
Yeah, look, how I see it, you know, we wanted to do life together. We wanted to, in a way, grow up together. Mm. We wanted to discover, in a way, ourselves together.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so, yes, we've done work together as well, but and yet at the same time, I think they say absence makes the heart grow fonder. Yeah. And I think over the last 15 years, I'm doing on average around, 10 to 20 flights every month. I think my record is 56 flights in 1 month. And so being away a lot and the like, it, I think that's actually brought us together quite strong.
It has the option of going either way, doesn't it? And for some people, it ruins the relationship, or the distance makes the heart grow fonder. In your case, it's worked well for you. So let's talk about the day of the accident, 2006, October. Do you remember some of the day? Like, you know, people who've gone through that experience, it's just a bit of a blur. They don't remember anything. But do you remember the day before or the day of the accident?
I didn't remember initially. It was about 6 months later I started to get a few flashbacks, and after about 12 months then I started to remember most of it.
Right.
But initially I didn't remember at all, and, you know, and in a way I believe it's a good thing for our system not to remember, because it can be quite traumatic.
Sure.
But I did get some flashbacks, and then I put a few pieces together. But like any other day, I was living in Launceston in Tasmania. I woke up and said goodbye to my wife and my two kids under the age of 4. And then I jumped in my big company car, big V8 Statesman. I was working for the Australian government as a youth futurist, so I did a lot of travel, driving travel. And I love driving, and I always have.
Mm.
So I drove from Launceston, up along the top north coast of Tasmania, up to a place called Burnie. I had some lunch there at my favourite restaurant there at KFC. and then I was driving back, and it was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I was doing a lot of extracurricular activities. From youth pastor at church, all the way through to my music studio, my dance stuff as well. And in a way, maybe something had to give.
Mm.
And but I was told I'd fallen asleep behind the wheel at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I was going around 104 in my big company car, and there was a semi trailer truck. He was going about 102, and so I veered over the other side of the road, and I had a head on collision with the truck. The truck driver thought I was committing suicide. Yeah, so it was pretty full on. My arm was ripped off. It was about 25 meters away from the car. And I had a lot of internal injuries, 6 broken ribs, lacerated liver, punctured kidney. Both of my lungs had collapsed. My hip was shattered. My entire right leg was completely wrecked. Femur, lost my kneecap, fibula, ankle, the entire lot. Yeah.
Wow. Whenever you came round after that, in hospital, obviously, what was your initial reaction?
I was in a state of denial. I'm thinking, man, this hasn't happened to me. I'm in a movie. It's going to end. I'm in this really bad nightmare. It's going to finish, because obviously I'm coming out of drugs. I'm a little bit here and there everywhere. So it was about 2 days. I was in denial. This hasn't happened. It's okay. I'm going to wake up from this nightmare. And then realizing what had happened, I remember going through pillow after pillow just simply from my tears. Actually, if I may, I'll go back to what the ambulance drivers said. They actually said that my heart stopped for about 3.5 minutes. So I was, I was pretty clinically dead. They resuscitated me, and then I was on life support for a week. And then waking up from this life support, I was in denial initially.
Yeah, and that's sort of understandable. I mean, I get that. You think, well, you know, this couldn't have happened to me.
Yeah, look, and it was very surreal. But, you know, the interesting thing is that when I did wake up and when I realized what had happened, I went through pillow after pillow from my tears, but not because I was sad for myself.
Yeah.
In a way, there was a deep level of gratitude that I actually survived this. There's a lot of people out there that haven't survived car accidents, but I actually survived. And on top of that, no one else was injured. So even though it was my fault, you know, I've now counseled people that same thing happened to them. They fell asleep behind the wheel. They had a head-on collision with a family. Two members of that family died. They're now up for manslaughter. They're locked up in jail. And I've helped people like that. So the good news is no one else was injured at all in the accident. Yeah. But I was really sad, mainly because my kids would have to grow up with a disabled father. And that was tough for me. That was really tough. You know, last time I saw my kids, throwing them up in the air with both arms, were running, skipping, you know, et cetera. Now all of a sudden I'm lame in a bed. Doctor said I'll never be able to walk ever again with one arm. I mean, that's a tough moment to navigate you being a father.
Yeah.
That was quite traumatic. For sure.
We're going to take a short break. It's probably not the best time to take a break, but we need to take a short break. Obviously, Sam has lived, but there's still a heck of a journey in front of him. We're going to explore that on the other side of this break. In the meantime, we are going to take a short break. Encourage you to check out the website, MomentumAustralia.org, and we're going to come back with our very special guest, Sam Cawthorn, on this week's Momentum in just a moment. Stay tuned.
This is Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. Find out more at MomentumAustralia.org.
All right, well, welcome back to Momentum. It is Tim and Des with you, and our special guest this week is Sam Cawthorn. We've just heard the moment back in 2006 that Sam's life changed forever. Essentially, just a quick recap, involved in a major car accident, left him with an amputated right arm, permanent disability in his right leg, and a whole host of other injuries. If you just tuned in, that's where we're starting this story right now. So, Sam, you've woken up in hospital. You did say it took you a little while to actually come to terms with the fact that this had happened, which is absolutely valid. And you just shared before the break, and Des and I were just talking with you during the break about the fact that you were weeping primarily for your kids not having a healthy father, like they were going to grow up with a disabled father. So just talk us through that for a moment, because, I mean, let's be honest, a lot of us would just go into a self-pity mode in that moment. I've woken up, this has happened to me, and yet your focus wasn't you at all, it was your kids. Do you know where that came from? Like, did you have to work at that, or was that genuinely where it was at? Was there a moment of self-pity or several moments of self-pity for you along the way?
Look, my, and I'll answer it this way, my father, he was one of the biggest inspirations for me. He was a very humble man, very religious, very, 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 very deep, faithful man. And he gave me this deep sense of gratitude and being grateful even for the little things. My father lived in a mindset of wonder. And even though he lived in a very simple life, he was a horticulturalist, he was a farmer, he was always in awe of the little things, right? Wow. And so with that deep sense of gratitude, even for the little things, obviously me being my father's son, that has been a fundamental foundation for me. And so the moment that I woke up, you know, I was just so grateful that, you know, because if you think about it, right, here I am in one of the best hospital systems in the world. Here I am still having a wife by my bedside. Here I am still having healthy kids. Here I am still alive. Mm-hmm. Here I am still got a roof over my head, food in the fridge, money in my wallet, et cetera. I mean, really, in all reality, there's nothing really to complain about. Yeah? And so there's a deep sense of gratitude that has been instilled in my life for most of my journey. Mm. So for me, waking up, man, I'm grateful I'm alive. You know, I'm grateful I still got friends and family. I still got a, you know, a creator that loves me. And so for me, it was really interesting, right? Get this, the nurses, the doctors, the OTs, et cetera, they saw that I was this overly positive person coming out of hospital, you know, coming out of a coma.
Yeah.
And this is what they said to my wife, my family. They said, look, he's in a little bit of denial. Well, hear me out. He's going to hit a brick wall at the end of the day. Just be prepared for this. Then at the end of the day, I didn't hit the brick wall. Then they said this, look, you know, he's a little bit over the top positive. He's going to hit the brick wall at the end of the week. Just be ready for that. he's going to hit it. And at the end of the week, it didn't happen. Then, well, wait. And then they said, look, This is unprecedented. We haven't seen this before. He will hit the brick wall in about a month's time. Just be ready for that. And a month came around and nothing. Then they said this. Look, in 12 months' time, he's going to hit the brick wall. Now, this accident was 17 years ago. I'm still waiting for this apparent brick wall to come. So for me, everything is about a deep, real, real, true understanding of gratitude.
Yeah,
and so you know, I wasn't concerned at all about my own, you know, physical, you know, being in a way, mate. I was more concerned with my kids. Like the last time I saw my kids, I was throwing them up in the air with both arms. We were running, we were skipping. They were everything. I mean, for those fathers that are out there that understand that you've got two young little girls. And you've got this natural instinct to want to protect them, to want to bring joy to their life. And then suddenly now you end up to being in a wheelchair for the rest of your life with one arm. Flipping heck, man, that was something to really weep about for me.
I mean, it's amazing for men who are listening to the show, you know, who are facing trauma or in whatever situation they're in, that pure motivation, that acceptance, that grace that you had is all powerful. It can overcome anything. And I just encourage men who are listening just to, you know, look for the positive in everything that's going on in your world. Forget about the negative. Focus on, you know, your the fact that you've been created, that you've got, you know, whatever's in your life that's positive, focus on that.
Yeah. What you focus on is what you get.
Yeah. That's right.
You said that and I wrote this down because I love that when you said it. You said that your dad had a mindset of wonder. And I wrote that down. Yes. I'm going to put that up on my wall because I think that's so good. A mindset of wonder. Yeah. But you said that he was a man of deep faith. So tell me about that moment for you as well, Sam. What did that do to your faith? What did the accident do to your faith? How did that change your faith? Did that strengthen your faith? You know, particularly in those 9 months of rehab after the accident.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was in hospital for a long time. You know, now let me share a little bit more about my mum. My mum, like any typical mum, you know, she's always right and quite emotional and the like. But one thing I loved about my mum is that during in the moment that I woke up from life support, I was in my own room in the hospital. It wasn't a shared room. So I was really, you know, blessed in a way. But I looked up and all I saw on the wall was my mum had handwritten, you know, A4 sheets of paper of just motivational quote Bible verses.
Oh my God.
On the entire wall. And by the end of the week, listen, by the end of the week, you couldn't even see a single bit of wallpaper, nothing at all. All you could see on the wall was just these Bible motivational quotes, Bible verses, right? And so obviously really, really cool witness for the nurses all walking in, but this is all I saw. This is all I saw. I woke up and this is all I saw on my wall. So in a way, I was sort of bombarded by it, you know, left, right, and center by, you know, by the wonder of my dad, by the encouragement of my mum, by my wife sitting right there by my side, and the like. And so, you know, yes, I was born and raised with a strong faith, and like many people in their late teens, they sort of, you know, go out in the world and they explore, you know, all the things that they shouldn't really be exploring. Yeah. But, you know, I suppose, you know, one by one, we all come back, and that was certainly my journey. So having that deep sense of faith, and a lot of my faith is a real simple faith, really simple. And the simplicity of, you know, as I mentioned, of gratitude, of wonder, of having that joy and that peace and that grace that are fundamental foundation parts for my life certainly was, you know, I don't think I would have had the miraculous rehabilitation or had this mindset that the nurses and the doctors were blown away by. And, you know, I'm still waiting for this brick wall, you know, as long as God is right there by my side, I don't think that brick wall will ever show up.
Yeah. So, Sam, I mean, we've talked about the fact that obviously your parents, and just hearing that story of what your mum did in your room, that's incredible. Most people can't relate to that. The fact that we are one of 11 siblings too, And key message here at Momentum, one of our key messages is for guys not to do life alone, right? Which we tend to do as guys. We can often slip into our man caves, want to go and isolate when things get tough. Tell us for you then the importance, and for guys listening, the importance for you in that moment, particularly in the 9 months where you've got people around you, you've got your family around you, you're married, you've got your kids, mum and dad are there, other siblings dropping in. Tell us about the importance of that and not just being there on your own, so to speak, and therefore to encourage guys listening who perhaps go, you know what, that sounds awesome, but that's not my experience.
Yeah, good. Look, obviously, yes, it's very important for you to have people around you, but I suppose I think one of the key ingredients to have those supportive people around you is the truth of vulnerability.
Mm.
Get this. The word vulnerability comes from the Latin word vulnerabilis, which means an open wound. Yeah. And I believe many of us have got scars. We've all got things that we might be shameful for, that we might be, you know, afraid to share. But one thing I would encourage everyone that's listening is that if you're not open, transparent, vulnerable, then people won't feel comfortable around you.
Mm.
Thus, you don't have that proximity around you.
Mm.
Yeah.
So for me, everything starts with you first being authentic with yourself and with other people. Now, obviously, yes, you'd be wise who you want to be transparent to and who you want to be vulnerable to, but you can't expect you to have that proximity around you and that supportive structure around you if you don't first of all be vulnerable with yourself and with other people. And that's, I think, great. People will want to have your back when you are transparent and vulnerable to them. People will not want to have your back. They won't even want to hang around with you if you're not, you know, living in a place of truth and transparency and vulnerability. And so for me, it's certainly been a fundamental foundation as a man for me to, yes, I still want to be masculine and tough and the like, but at the same time, I think that vulnerability and that authenticity is going to be pivotal for anyone at all to develop that supportive structure around you.
So they're not mutually exclusive, is what you're saying. You can be a real man, but yet be vulnerable and be open.
Can I share with you one a really, really cool story that'll blow everyone's mind? Get this ready. So in August last year, my son was born after the car accident. Yeah. My son, he turned 14 years old, going through puberty, tough time in his life. And so my son, and I noticed this, and he's navigating his whole body, sexuality, the whole lot. And at the same time, I was in a really busy time of year. This is in end of 2022, really busy time of year. But you know what I decided to do? I decided to spend 2 months with my son. And so I rang up his school and I told the principal, I'm taking my son out of school for 2 months. And the principal was cheering us on. So we went walkabout. So what does that mean? It's an Aboriginal Indigenous term where a boy becomes a man. So we went outback. We did 18,000 kilometres. I built this massive Toyota Land Cruiser, four-wheel drive, you know, 3-inch lift, snorkel, rooftop tent, the whole lot of swaggers. And we did all over Cape York, right up there in the top north tip of Australia. Then we went into Simpson Desert. And get this, we even came across, in the middle of Simpson Desert, there was no phone coverage, nothing at all around. We came across an Aboriginal family that had their car had broken down, the entire family. They were stuck in 40 degree heat for 3 days. No water, no food. We gave them all our water. We gave them our dry food. Then we towed them like 600 kilometers to the nearest service station. These are the things that I did with my son just a couple of months ago. And so now, you know, and so, yes, we can still have that masculine, you know, we got bogged. We were jumping off cliffs into crocodile-infested waters. We're all winching ourselves out and the like. So, yes, you can still have those masculine boy-type fun, but at the same time, that vulnerability is going to be key for everyone.
Yeah. Wow.
That's a great story.
I love that. Love that.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
We're going to get you back for another show because there's a couple of things we really want to talk about. A couple of them are a couple of your books. And it's all about this mindset and attitude thing. But just to set the scene for next week, let me just finish with this. And so you said in an interview that I saw, and you said, it's our decision, not our condition. It's our decision, not our condition, that determines a lot of things. So just leaving the show for this week for the guys listening right now. I mean, they've obviously heard your story. It is incredible. I mean, the times that I've known you, and it's been, we were just talking off air, it's been a few years now, you've always just been like this. It's insane. I mean, I don't know whether you wake up like this every single morning or whether you have to G yourself up, but I don't know. It's insane. I want some. If you can bottle it, let me know, because I want a bottle. But for the guys listening, let's just leave them this week. I mean, how do they start? If they hear you and they go like, this is insane, like, I just don't even know where to start in creating that for myself or how to become that sort of person. A couple of final thoughts around that.
Yeah, look, that quote, it's our decision, not our condition. You know, the word decision comes from the Latin word decere, you know, incision. Scission means to cut. We know that, you know, scission. And the word decide, the word side, suicide, pesticide, the word side means to kill. Mm. So the word decision and decide means to cut off and kill. Wow. And I believe, in a way, leaders, you know, they love sitting on the fence. They don't like making decisions. But my encouragement to everyone listening is maybe it is time for you to make a decision. Decision about, you know, your own gratitude, decision about your own career path, decision about your own mindset, and even stopping bad behaviors that shouldn't be in your life right now. And so for me, yes, we all have conditions, whether it's financial, mine's very physical, but we've all got conditions in our life. But it is our decision, not our condition, that determines who we are.
SamCawthorne.com, by the way, if you'd like to check out Sam's website, SamCawthorne.com. Lots of stuff on there. And our website is MomentumAustralia.org. But look, in all seriousness, have a look around Sam's website, because we're going to be chatting with him next week about a couple of his books and explore that and how they can help you move forward, or actually is the term bounce forward, and that will make more sense next week. Sam Cawthorne, it's been an absolute pleasure, man, having you on the show. Really appreciate you sharing your story with us and being vulnerable, that word again, being vulnerable with us today. And excited to have you back on the show next week, man. Take care.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. For more information or to hear this week's show again, go to MomentumAustralia.org. You can also access a whole range of resources to help you on your journey and to get in touch with the team at MomentumAustralia.org. Until next time, keep moving forward with Momentum.